Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This is a special edition of Rewind, your week in review. We at Rewind wanted to give you a chance to listen to the latest update by the governor and the Secretary of Health Services, Andrea Palm, on the COVID-19 virus. I'm Steve Walters with Wisconsin Eye. I want to welcome my co-host, J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics, who's participating online. Hey, J.R., it's been a somber, serious, but incredibly newsworthy week, right?
I've used that phrase, I've never seen this before, many times the last decade. This week has been more unique than any other, I think, that I can remember.
Yes. Okay. Not all of you had a chance to listen to the hour-plus briefing by the governor and Secretary of Palm and the other officials with the Department of Health Services. So, JR, let's go through some of those things that the governor and the officials of DHS just said. I'll go first, JR. They gave us the latest numbers. In Wisconsin, 3,455 tests for COVID-19 have been conducted, 206 positives. That's a positive rate of 6%, and tragically, three deaths. Those deaths have occurred in Fond du Lac, Ozaukee, and yesterday in Milwaukee County. JR, other takeaways from the governor's briefing?
A big piece of that teleconference was no stay in shelter order from the governor right now, so he thinks we can avoid that. Well, that's noteworthy in watching that is that if you've watched Governor Evers so far with this process has played out, he's not been the first to announce anything like school closures, bar closures, but not the last. We've seen, I think, New York now, California, and Illinois had those stay-in-shelter orders. We are, at least at this point, not issuing one. Evers says we think he can avoid that because people in Wisconsin are taking this seriously.
Right. And point number three, there were two questions on using the National Guard for the April 7 election. The governor said, let me check my notes, that all options are open. But there's an indication at one point the governor's legal counsel said, yes, we are considering having guard workers work as poll workers. Any other takeaways from that briefing, JR?
I think those are the highlights.
Okay. All right. Now let's look into the institutional response by state government and others to the COVID-19 virus. And I just want to go through some of the changes just since last week. We taped the last Rewind, but these changes have occurred since last week. JR, I'm going to jump in. Any additions you have? Bars, restaurants statewide must offer only food or carry out. Size of groups. Last week, the governor was saying social groups, 50, up to 50, no more. This week, the governor said social groups, 10, no more. The dates of private and public schools in Wisconsin were closed until a date certain in April. The governor amended that, saying the school closings will now be indefinite. Excuse me. There's a new limit as of this week on daycare centers. At any time, 10 staffers and no more than 50 children. The governor also said that those applying and receiving unemployment benefits do not have to conduct 4 job searches a week. Now, JR, you've got the latest numbers on the apps, the number of people filing for UI unemployment insurance benefits.
Yes, the Department of Workforce Development has started posting these updates today, as of yesterday, 16,252 applications for unemployment.
That was on Thursday, March 19th, excuse me.
Yep, that compares to all of 703 the same day a year before. On Wednesday, 14,988 compared to 725, same day a year before. Just look at this ramp up, Steve. 1,500 on Sunday, 4,400 on Monday, 86 on Tuesday, 15,000 on Wednesday, 16 on Thursday. This is just the beginning of what we're going to see. And the question has been, I've talked to people, okay, what's this going to do to our economy? What are the feds going to do? When the feds do act, what does the state do? So I get the impression that lawmakers don't want to get ahead of the feds because they want to see what the feds are going to do, and they do something that layers on top of that, not the ones going first on the package, because, right, frankly, we don't know where this is going, how severe it's going to be, and what the proper response is going to be for the state until we see what the federal government's going to do.
Okay, and just a P.S. on that. I heard Department of Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman say, yes, at the moment we have a $2 billion with a B balance in our unemployment trust fund. But I remember just 10 years ago, after the Great Recession, that trust fund was way, way, way in the red. Okay, other things that happened this week, the Division of Motor Vehicles and the Department of Revenue are agencies that limited their person-to-person contacts. DMV stations were closed so they could be sanitized today, and saw a press release, the Department of Workforce Development vocational rehab offices are closed. Finally, there was a press release just this week again. The Department of Financial Institutions warned payday lenders, don't raise interest rates during this healthcare emergency. And then, JR, update us on the Waupun prison employee who tested positive, and you've been covering that. WIS Politics has been covering that, and the reaction.
My coworker Pat got first confirmation of a positive test in the prison system. This all comes really at kind of this time when the ACLU and others are calling for the release of certain prisoners. People are being held on crime list revocations, for example, to try to limit the spread of this imprisonment. If you think about it, the guys in prison are closely cloistered. They don't have a lot of personal space. How do you manage this in the prison system? It's going to be very difficult, to say the least, going forward. At the same time, I don't know you want to release people just ad hoc in the middle of this. So how do you navigate that situation? Watch that going forward.
Yes, and the governor was asked about that at this briefing that we're following. And he said that DOC, Department of Corrections, has made significant changes. He does not contemplate the release of any prisoners. And he's very confident that the Department of Corrections is looking out for the safety of both inmates and those that work in our prisons. Okay, JR, let's go to a new topic. In the middle of this week, both the state and Democratic Party sued to extend the voting timelines for our April 7 election. Now, before I ask your reaction, let's go through what that lawsuit seeks. Extending the electronic by-mail voter registration to April 3, 4 days before the election. Suspending photo ID and proof of residency requirements, during the COVID-19 emergency. Extend the deadline for receiving absentee mail-in ballots to April 7 postmark. Count absentee ballots received within 10 days after the April 7 election. JR, my question for you. The filing of this lawsuit surprised me, given that we have a Democratic governor who we'll get into in a moment, says we're going to keep that election on April 7th. So was this a concession that nobody's going to move the election? Why did the DNC file this?
Well, I asked a couple people that, and one of the responses that I got is that, you know, some of these laws about absentee ballots, Democrats aren't happy with them in general. This is an opportunity to, one, make sure people have an easier time to vote, and two, they can file this lawsuit if these things are overturned and the election goes on without a hitch this spring, say, hey, these things aren't needed. We should expand, as a matter of principle, these restrictions on absentee ballot. Now, the online and mail registration deadline was Wednesday. This is very key. It was not the deadline to request an absentee ballot.
That's very important.
It was the deadline to be registered online or via mail so you could avoid leaving your home to get an absentee ballot. Because if you were registered by Wednesday, under current law, current requirement, you can request this online through My Vote to get your ballot. If you weren't registered, however, by the 18th, you have to go and do it in person at clerk's office or at the polls on election day. The people on the lawsuit are saying people are afraid right now. It's just kicking in how serious this is. They need to extend that deadline to give those folks a chance to go take advantage of this option to register online or via mail because, oh, by the way, you have to send in a copy of your driver's license, for example. If they have to go to a Kinko's or a FedEx, they're afraid to go out in public right now. So extend that deadline on that.
Yes, and now let's look at comments from the Democratic National Chairman, Tom Perez, why the suit was filed, and a response from a state GOP leader. Mr. Perez says, these steps, these changes extending our voting timelines are critical to ensuring that all Wisconsinites who wish to participate in the April 7 elections are able to do so. The response from the Mark Jefferson, the Wisconsin Republican Party executive director, Democrats are trying to hijack a national health crisis to rig an election in their favor. JR, you've been following. Has the state GOP party and others, have they responded to this lawsuit?
Actually, there are briefs due as we speak. Right now in the federal court, as a judge weighs whether to issue a temporary injunction. Now, state GOP also this week called for local clerks to extend early in-person absentee voting. So places like Madison and Milwaukee are known for this, where the clerks open the office ahead of election day to allow people to vote in-person absentee so they avoid the long lines at the polling sites. Many smaller communities do not. Remember, Republicans tried to limit what Milwaukee, Madison, among others, do because they thought it was unfair. Those limits were shot down by a federal judge. The GOP is now calling on these other clerks and other communities to say, hey, you guys should open these up yourselves so that people can vote early and avoid the congregation on election day at the polls.
And just another footnote, just today there was a press release from the city of Madison. They are setting aside some parking spots, four of them, I believe, outside the city-county building to allow curbside voting. Okay, new subject, JR. Now let's get into the state dialogue over to whether to move the April 7 elections. First, let's start with Governor Tony Evers says this is an exercise in democracy. The governor just repeated that at the DHS briefing that we just followed. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said it would take an act of the legislature, and we're not even going to consider it. But I'm so intrigued, JR, because I did a phone call and interview with former Governor Thompson. He said the election should be moved, and Chris Abley said the election should be moved. And you were telling me we're also hearing from some mayors.
Yeah, three Fox Valley mayors, Dean Coffer of Neenah, former Republican lawmaker, Eric Genrich of Green Bay, former Democratic lawmaker, Tim Hanna of Appleton. All three of them said the election should be delayed so that we can move more of a mail-in ballot system to avoid people congregating at the polls on election day. Genrich called this basically, if we keep it where it is, a logistical train wreck. I mean, think of the concerns you have. Well, I don't know where you go to vote, Steve, but when I go vote, almost everyone in the room besides me is above 65 years old.
Yes.
They're all retirees or staffing the polls.
Yes.
So you're talking about one of those vulnerable populations being at the polls on election day and a fear of, okay, what's that going to do? Think about long lines. We saw in Illinois, for example, this week, trying to keep 6 feet apart between people, but that's going to lengthen the lines. How's that going to work? All these questions about logistics. People be afraid to go out on election day if they didn't register by, you know, this past week. What are they going to do if they don't want to turn out? They can't get an absentee ballot mailed to them. All things like that that are kind of becoming these concerns of, okay, it is going to disenfranchise some people unless we change the rules. Now, the flip side of the governor has been, it's not just about the presidential primary on April 7th.
Right.
Yes, that's a high-profile race.
Yep.
We also have a state Supreme Court election. But beyond that, there are all these local offices that are on the ballot April 7th. And local offices are kind of unique in that there's a very narrow window between winning election and taking office. So what happens if you don't have the election April 7th? Who's going to be the Milwaukee County Executive later on this spring?
That's a good point.
Because Chris Abley's not seeking re-election. So Right. Not only would you have to extend the push back the election, to extend the terms of these local officials. I don't know if you can do that. I'm not a constitutional expert. How would that work? And oh, by the way, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, he's on the ballot. So if they don't have this election, does he stay in office indefinitely until they have one? I mean, there are real concerns about what do you do, not just with big places like that, but local, you know, smaller communities where you would not have a town chair,
and
a mayor, county executive, those things of things.
And Mayor Barrett just announced yesterday that he is self-quarantining, which means he would be not available to campaign actively until the Thursday before the April 7 election. JR, you read my mind. Now let's hear from Governor Evers on the importance of holding that April 7 election, followed by two members of the State Elections Board, a Democratic appointee, and Jacobs, saying we have to move that election, and a Republican appointee, former Assembly Member Dean Knutson, saying no, we're going to keep that April 7 election in place. Please.
I just want to make sure people understand the complexity of our spring general election. It's not a primary election. It's only a primary election for the presidential candidates. We have lots of other nonpartisan, and you know this, we have lots of other nonpartisan officials at the county level, at the state level, at the local level, and so we have to weigh all that. But at the end of the day, this is about the complexity of our election system. This is about our democracy, and I know it's also about health. And we will be weighing all those things going forward. But in the meantime, people should be able to get out and provide input to our democracy by voting absentee as much as people can do that.
I had, in the last week or so, been of the opinion that we were going to be able to safely administer the April 7th election, truly. And I had taken that position, I'd taken it publicly, and I discussed it at length with people who asked me about it. I no longer believe that we are able to fairly and properly administer this election without delay or postponement.
It is vitally important that this election happens on April 7th because it is vitally important to our state that we have continuity of government during a crisis. The election must go on. We need to do our best with this, and I hope that we can come to some consensus around this, that it is important that that April 7th election happens on April 7th.
Because it is so important, it is the April 7th spring election. I want to stay on this subject for a little bit. Some of the issues here raised by the Elections Commission, which, by the way, deadlocked 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans, and whether it recommend postponement. Let's look at number one, the lack of mail-in envelopes for the record number of absentee ballots. JR, what's the latest number of the number of absentee ballots that were requested?
I'm looking at Elections Commission's website right now. As of today, it's 380,279 statewide. Wow. To put that into perspective, during the 2016 election period, or the spring election, with contested primaries for president on both sides, it was 249,503. We still have a couple weeks of request ballots.
And JR, don't those same numbers show that about a third of those requests for absentees are coming from Dane and Milwaukee counties?
I have the numbers. Milwaukee County was 62,644. Dane County is 67,878.
Whoa, wow. Okay, so we're on track for a record number of absentee ballots. There are worries that they come in special envelopes. I got mine in the mail on Wednesday. And there are worries that there are not enough election materials to deal with this record demand of absentee ballots. But in the press conference, the governor's legal counsel said that they have authorized any special aids for materials to be given to the Elections Commission to deal with the demand for absentee ballots. Point two, moving polling places to reduce the risk of the virus. JR, I'm already hearing that the commission has moved some of the precincts, right?
They've created the ability for to move them because the deadline is 30 days out from the election. They've created a waiver for that. Part of the concern is elder care facilities, obviously you don't want people congregating there because they're the most vulnerable population. They're allowing people to move polling sites within that 30-day window, which usually is not allowed.
And then the final point, they want to protect and potentially replace older poll workers. Jerry, you asked me where I voted. You vote in Madison. I vote in the town of Cottage Grove. Our town clerk put up an appeal for college students who are no longer back at their universities and colleges. Please come in and train as poll workers. Most of the poll workers at your polling place are over 65, JR, mine too. This is a big issue, right?
Yeah, of course, the concern is, okay, if they have college kids who do this, guess what? If they have it or they contract it while they're there, they could go spread it. So, like, there's a challenge in that regard. If you don't, okay, you're not going to have older workers at the polls, but who are you putting at risk than by having younger workers or other workers there?
Right, not to mention the training. This is where it was intriguing that both the governor said using Guards members and his legal counsel was an option. Okay, JR, new subject. The governor and legislative leaders have begun talking about a response to the COVID-19, and it was very interesting to me. Well, first of all, let's make a point. Governor Evers vetoed $392 million that is now available. Do you see that as available for a COVID-19 package or to offset any decrease in tax collections because of what even President Trump said could be a recession?
Oh, and I ask you, it's the latter because we don't actually get any materialize. Remember, all these are all projections on revenue right now, right? So I don't know what's going to be there come June 30th in the till. We talked to Bob Lang this week, the director of the Fiscal Bureau. He said that obviously there's going to be an impact on state revenues from what's going on here. He's not doing a projection just yet. He wants to see a couple months of revenue. A big one's going to be the income tax collections. Don't forget the feds just pushed back until, is it July 15th?
July 15th.
You have to pay your, taxes or file your taxes. But we're seeing like all these moving, this stuff move around. It could take a while to get a handle on this. Big thing is, it's probably a good thing in hindsight that Evers and lawmakers could not agree on a package, use that projected surplus, because again, it was projected. It's not likely going to go away. Remember, a big piece of that surplus was an extra $818 million in corporate tax and tax collections, much of that from the corporate tax. That's probably not going to happen with all these businesses being shut down and laying people off. So we have a big challenge on our hands. I don't know the depth of the hole just yet. And we have about $655 million, I believe, in the rainy day fund. So that will help. But will that be enough to offset what we're going to see?
Well, just to make a point, J.R., Mr. Lang, the director of LFB, did project in January an additional $818 million coming in by mid-2021. Now, you and I are in downtown Madison right now. It's essentially shut down. No one knows the dramatic fall-off in tax collections. After the Great Recession, the one-year drop-off in income taxes, which is the biggest source of state revenue, 13% drop in 1 year, that drop was $810 million that was not collected. So nobody knows how much fewer tax collections we're going to get. Right, JR?
Oh, no, because how long is this going to last? How long will it take to get business back up and running once it's over? What businesses will be able to come back? I mean, you know, like if you're a tavern right now or a restaurant, you're worried that you will not be able to reopen, period, when this is all over. So there's some challenges out there.
Right. Okay, now let's look at the state Senate first. The 33 senators were scheduled to meet next week. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, that is not going to happen to protect senators, their families, and Senate staff employees. Then, excuse me, as part of that announcement, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said, we're going to call an emergency session. And here's the nuances that I want to get in with you, JR. A special session to just allow the Senate to act on Assembly-passed bills or also some potential COVID-19 relief package. Do you see these as separate actions?
Yeah, I mean, when I talked to Fitzgerald this week, he said, like, look, there are all these bills that pass the Assembly.
More than 100, right?
They're basically frozen. They're basically freezing them. Say, okay, we can have a special session call, come back, take these up, and knock them out. Okay, that's our extraordinary session, sorry. And knock them out. So that's a possibility.
Yes.
The second piece is this COVID-19 response, which they're trying to work on with Evers right now. Now, the governor immediately called for lawmakers to meet and repeal the one-week delay in collecting unemployment. Remember back in 2011, the budget, Republicans approved this, that the argument was when you're laid off, usually there's a lag between your date you're laid off and your last paycheck, that you should wait then 1 week to collect your unemployment after you file for it. He wants that repealed. What else might he seek in this package? We will see. And asking Fitzgerald about that process, so this was members actually brought that up as a possibility. One thing to watch is Evers is talking about a repeal. Might they be willing to suspend it temporarily instead? Just kind of a nuance there. But what else is going to be in there? Again, I get the impression of waiting for the feds to act to know what is going to be in that package from the federal government, where that money is going to go. And they'll kind of wrap around the state's response to that federal package.
Okay, but JR, you and I look at the statements issued by these leaders after these meetings. So let's go through what the governor's spokesperson, Melissa Baldoff, said. It was a productive meeting, and we look forward to working together to protect the health and safety of Wisconsinites and begin our economic recovery. Then a joint statement issued by Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. It was a productive discussion. We all want to do what's best for our citizens and businesses during these unprecedented and demanding times. They both used the term productive, JR. That's kind of, what does productive mean for you in light of this?
Well, for these guys, anything is productive. Remember, we've talked about for the last 15 months about how the governor and the two top Republicans don't have a real relationship. They have not been on the same page about almost anything since the day he was gotten off, even before that, if you think about it, because of the lame duck session in December of 2018. This crisis may finally force those guys to get on the same page and roll in the same direction. Now, I'm not going to predict they're all going to be singing the same hymn book every day, but this is, you know, we've already seen the governor talking about meeting with these guys on a regular basis, which had not happened before. We've talked about that they don't meet every week. or even every month sometimes. So this may be that kind of push for these guys to finally get along, at least, I guess, get along in quotation marks, to get something done because we are facing a crisis.
Yes, and as the numbers go up for both, tragically, Secretary Paul predicted more deaths and the number of positive tests for COVID-19, the idea of a bipartisan package takes on more urgency. Okay, JR, time for your stock picks, my friend.
All right, so look, we're in a very serious situation in the state and this nation, but politics still go on. So with that in mind, rising Ron Kind challengers, we're up to 5 Republicans now who want to take on Ron Kind. Latest, Derek Van Orden, who is a retired Navy SEAL, spent 26 years in the Navy, I believe. Grew up in Wisconsin, moved away, moved back after his Navy career was over. Been on Fox News, written a book, been in a couple movies, actually. There are 5 folks who are looking to run. They all have something in common. They've never run for public office before. They can't write a big check, and they face a challenge in taking Ron Kind, who's got $5 million in the bank in December. Van Orden's probably one of a couple of Republicans that national GOP force are going to really get to watch. They like his profile. The question is, who will emerge after this primary, and what path will be against Kind? Because don't forget, we're talking about Bernie Sanders as the possible nominee. Republicans are like, hey, this guy's not going to play well in rural Wisconsin or in the suburban areas or whatnot. Now you're talking about Joe Biden likely being the nominee. He probably helps a Ron Kind, for example, in making that it tougher for Donald Trump to win the 3rd district, which he did 4 years ago by more than 4 points. So it's probably also positive in Kind's favor.
Next.
Retirements, we had Romaine Quinn, a 29-year-old lawmaker from Barron, Wisconsin, who announced he won't seek re-election, taking a job in the private sector. He wants to start a family, wants to be home, which is understandable, obviously. I have a surprise every session. I'm trying to I didn't see coming. It was Quinn this time.
Me too.
On the flip side, Jim Ott, lawmaker from suburban Milwaukee, probably going to be a top target by Democrats this fall because of the Trump struggles in suburban suburbs. He told me he's going to seek re-election. He wants to keep pushing drunk driving, tougher drunk driving penalties. Watch him to be a top target for Democrats. Hillary Clinton won his seat in 2016. That will be a measure of has the Trump brand kind of rebounded in suburban areas like that Menomonee Falls district that Ott occupies.
And falling, sir.
Ron Johnson. So, look, Ron Johnson's not a politician. I mean, he's proud of that fact, and he talks about it quite a bit. He has also made no bones about not paying attention to some of the typical customs and politics, but he keeps finding ways to kind of put his foot in his mouth. There have been a number of comments about this coronavirus outbreak that have kind of caught people's attention. I mean, just like today, he was on a conference call with put on by Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce. He expressed his opposition to the plans that are out there about direct payments to individuals as part of this kind of response. And his quote was basically that just giving people checks is going to do nothing when they're bunkered down in their own home. They don't have places to spend money on. Now, he may have a point about some of the stuff he's raising, but it sounds quite insensitive to his constituents who, some of them, need money right now because they've lost their jobs. They don't know how they're going to pay the rent or pay for groceries. It's just tone deaf in some ways what he's saying. And people I talk to, they get that he is not a politician, but at times he can be a little bit more sensitive than things that he says because his constituents are looking for him and others for leadership and a reassuring voice in this time of crisis.
And, JR, are all 4 Republican members of the U.S. House voted against the COVID-19 package, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Johnson voted against the package in the Senate. He's one of 8 people who did. Now, with that,
quickly, we're almost out of time. Go.
He made a point that the package is going to require small business to basically float sick leave, then get credits later on. He wants to use state unemployment funds to do that instead. There, you know, you can understand that point, but in a time of crisis, some other stuff is just a little too much for people.
Right, and a development I want to cover really quickly. The state Democratic Party has said they're canceling their 8 congressional caucuses, and they will scale back potentially a great deal. The state Democratic Convention that JR, you and I here had planned to cover early in June. Wisconsin and I will continue to cover the briefings from DHS, and JR and I will be trying to stay on top of the fast-moving developments. I'm Steve Walders.
I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for March 20.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.